Sometimes injuries are visible and the treatment is fairly simple. But in the case of traumatic brain injury, emotional and memory-related impairment can be a challenge long after the physical healing has seemingly taken place. Welcome to Weekend Connection. My name is Mike Dyes. Now, let's get connected as we think about traumatic brain injury. In the summer of 2002, Patty Foster's life changed dramatically when she suffered a serious brain injury in a traffic accident. She was in a coma for weeks and her life hung in the balance. Well, today Patty Foster is with us to discuss her recovery from traumatic brain injury, the process of that recovery, and also her passion to inspire others facing similar challenges in their lives. First of all, Patty, welcome to Weekend Connection.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
Well, we're going to hear about your accident and the ongoing recovery process from traumatic brain injury. It might be good to start out, though, with a basic definition. What are we talking about when we say traumatic brain injury?
For the most part, Mike, it's an external force that causes trauma to the brain, the skull, the covering, and the insides, and the swelling that happens, and the bruising, and things that follow suit. But it's usually that traumatic, external, blunt kind of force to the head.
Well, let's describe that day back in June of 2002 when the accident occurred. Where were you going when this happened?
We were on our way to our last Bible study meeting before taking a summer break. There were four of us in a Tahoe going to meet the other ladies in the town. We would meet at homes. There were generally about a dozen, 12 to 15 of us, young professionals in our 30s and 20s. And we were on our way to have our last meeting on that June 18th when suddenly, Mike, we had stopped at an intersection. It was around 6:45 in the evening, so you can imagine how, you know, busy traffic was and people running errands and picking up children and so forth. We had completely stopped at a red light. All of us were being good law-abiding citizens, had our seatbelts on. I had bought flowers for all the ladies in the Bible study. I was the Bible study leader. I had them behind my seat, behind the second seat of the Tahoe. I was sitting behind the driver. As we were stopped, I took off my seatbelt to turn and check on the flowers. Suddenly, bam, that's when the impact happened. A semi pulling a trailer full of cars going 70 miles per hour rear-ended us, and from there, life changed.
I understand you were actually thrown out of the vehicle.
Yes. I was the only one ejected out of the Tahoe. Three remained in, and I went out. And one lady said, Patty, when your body came out of the Tahoe, she said, you went up into the air. She said, normally you would go across, you know, and hit a tree or a pole or go down. Gravity pulls you down. But she said, you went up. And she said it was as though God's hands had come down and suspended you in the air above the very SUV that you had just been ejected out of. And Mike, one of the other eyewitnesses I actually met at the trial, she is an RN. She had just gotten off her shift, and she was going home, she and her husband. She thought that when my body came out of the Tahoe, she thought that I was a piece of laundry. And suddenly when I came down to the ground, that's when she realized that was a human.
We're talking with Patty Foster, conference speaker and author of Coping with Traumatic Brain Injury. She's telling us about her experience with brain injury in 2002 when she was in a terrible traffic accident. Now, Patty, one of the people riding in the vehicle actually died from the accident, correct?
Yes. Sweet Heather, she was the youngest in our group, had just graduated high school, had been accepted to college, and Texas A&M was her college, pre-med major. She was one of those people. To know her is to love her. And how so many of us can meet someone and instantaneously we feel connected to someone. That was Heather. a true God follower. And she was in the front passenger seat, had her seatbelt on. But apparently, when the traumatic force of the tractor trailer rig and trailer of cars rear into the tow hole, then it jerked her body and her head. They took her to the nearest acute hospital, and the trauma team worked on her throughout that evening into the late hours. They tried best because they really thought that they could save her. They really thought they could sustain her life. I've been told lots of stories and the incredible love that came from the family and friends and, you know, all the people who knew her and loved her, and the tears and just not believing that something like this had even happened, much less what to do.
A reminder of the brevity of life.
Yes, very much.
Now, when they found you there on the road, the witnesses came, did they expect you to make it through this?
No, Mike, they didn't. In fact, one of my dear radio friends was one of the actual eyewitnesses of the situation as well. He didn't see the actual impact, but he had turned to the detour, taken the detour. But he was one of the few who had the courage, I suppose, to come out to the highway to see my body. I had been ejected, and I am told that my body went some three stories sliding across the highway and stopping in a lane of traffic. There was no resemblance to the Patty Foster he had worked with in radio. He had no idea that he even knew me. When the first responders arrived, they weren't sure what the situation was. EMS, when they were there working on the whole situation, one of the the EMS workers searched for a pulse for me. Apparently had a pulse, lost a pulse type of situation. But then no pulse to be found. So she pulled the white sheet over me, assuming I was dead. Mm. In the midst of it, Mike, granted, this is June 18th in Texas, and that is where you have triple-digit temperatures, you know, 100 degrees plus. Mm-hmm. So many of the eyewitnesses gathered hands, and they began to pray and shield me from that scorching sun coming down. In the midst of that is when they heard a gurgling noise. And so then they called and yelled. That's when the life flight helicopter was contacted, and he landed at the scene.
Hmm. So they take you to the hospital, and you were actually unconscious for weeks. Is that correct?
6 weeks in a coma. I have no memory of people or things or sights or sounds or no recollection of a memory during that time.
We're talking with Patty Foster, conference speaker and author of Coping with Traumatic Brain Injury. One of the things about injuries is that many times, for instance, if I were to break my foot, hopefully it would heal and it'd be back to normal. It wouldn't affect other areas of my being the way that a traumatic brain injury would. For instance, doesn't that often, the traumatic brain injury, affect a person's memory and personality as well as the physical effects?
Very much so. In fact, predominantly, it will affect in a lasting adjustment for the rest of that individual's life, affect mentally and emotionally the cognitive realm of that person. Yes, physical to an extent, but that's not the greatest deficit. That's usually, overall, that's not the hugest percentage of the disability that lingers in the majority of TBI survivors. It's mental, it's cognitive, the emotional part. In fact, Mike, you may be familiar with Susan Connors. She is the president, CEO of Brain Injury Association of America. She once said, and I have this quote on a post-it note attached to my desk, brain injury is often invisible since changes are on the inside. That's very much the way this silent epidemic is, that seeing is not necessarily believing when it comes to brain injury.
Well, there's so much we're going to talk about regarding your recovery, but we'll have to get to that next time. We do have a little bit of time, though, to talk a little bit to the family. So what were some of the things your family and your friends did during your recovery that really you think you'd like to pass on as things we can learn from? Maybe somebody listening who is in a similar situation, a family member has been hurt in this way. What did you learn through that of how the families can minister to that person who's been injured?
My family has often talked to me about this, my mother particularly, how important it was for her to have people there, the power of presence, people's presence being there, not necessarily always talking or trying to solve a problem, but listening, having them there, and that people would listen, they would pay attention, answer the phones, write down who visited or the gifts that they brought, and they would give people updates. And in fact, a lot of the ladies of the Bible study, where we were going that night when the wreck happened, they were some of the first ones at the ER, and automatically they began to help my family, to automatically answer phones, update people, talk with people as they came, and made lists of what was brought and things that were done. And Mother has talked about that often, how much that helped her, and what an aid of help that was to Mother and Dad and my brother and my sister-in-law and others. Many of your listeners, hopefully, who have connection with brain injury, they'll connect to what I'm about to say, but how important it is that hospitals, that medical personnel, staff, have some kind of relationship with others who have gone through this incredible tragedy so that they can connect them with the people who are just now undergoing traumatic brain injury, the families who have never gone through it before. They don't know what to expect, who to turn to, what to ask, what to think, or how to comprehend, or what will happen to their loved one in the future, mm-hmm. or what might happen to their loved one, or how did they deal with things, or how did they get through situations. So a very powerful thing that my mother has talked about often is the incredible need there is for others who have gone through brain injury to connect with those who are currently going through brain injury. They're at the acute hospital or at a rehab or at a transitional rehab, and they can meet those as well going through getting involved in maybe a local brain injury support group, form those relationships to encourage one another and to listen to one another. So there are some incredible, what I call vitamins of B12, to give ye hot strength and encouragement. So how needed that is.
So it's a message of hope, not a hopeless message. Somebody facing a tragedy like this, you offer hope to them, don't you?
Amen. Huge. How much it's needed. In fact, Mike, before we finish up, there's a wonderful, relatively new website available to people throughout the world that delivers hope. It's called hopeafterbraininjury.org, www.hopeafterbraininjury.org, O-R-G.
We're talking with Patty Foster, conference speaker and author of Coping with Traumatic Brain Injury, telling us about her experiences with a traumatic brain injury and accident in 2002. We'll have her back again very soon here on Weekend Connection. But Patty, how can people contact you in the meantime?
I would love to hear from them. My website is the best way to get in touch with me, www.pattyfoster.com. That's PATTIFOSTER.com.
All right, pattyfoster.com. Patty, thank you for coming and sharing with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate your time to acknowledge the incredible need that TBI survivors and caregivers have.
We'll have Patty back again in a few weeks as she helps us understand more about traumatic brain injury. My name is Mike Dyes. Thanks for joining us for Weekend Connection.